Translation. O King, in all circumstances, whether you consider the soul to be an eternal principle, or the material body to be perishable, or everything to exist in the impersonal absolute truth, or everything to be an inexplicable combination of matter and spirit, feelings of separation are due only to illusory affection and nothing more. Purport. The actual fact is that every living being is an individual part and parcel of the Supreme Being, and this constitutional position is subordinate cooperative service. And this constitutional position is subordinate cooperative service, either in his conditional material existence or in his liberated position of full knowledge and eternity. The living entity is eternally under control of the Supreme Lord. But those who are not conversant with factual knowledge put forward many speculative propositions about the real position of the living entity. It is admitted, however, by all schools of philosophy that the living being is eternal and that the covering body of the five material elements is perishable and temporary. The eternal living entity transmigrates from one material body to another by the law of karma, and material bodies are perishable by their fundamental structure. Therefore, there is nothing to be lamented in the case of the souls being transferred into another body, or the material body is perishing at certain stage. There are others who also believe in the merging of the spiritual soul in the Supreme Spirit when it is uncovered by the material encasements, and there are others also who do not believe in the existence of spirit soul, but believe in tangible matter. In our daily experience, we find so many transformations of matter from the one form to the another, but we do not lament for such changing features. In either of the above cases, the force of divine energy is uncheckable. No one has any hand of it, and thus there is no cause of grief. Okay, try to elaborate a little bit. I have a few hours to dwell on, meditate, something, ask your blessings. It's embarrassing to sit here, and my ego always gets flattened. It's very good. So I get some benefit of it each time. Sometimes climbing on Vyasasan is like climbing a mountain, and Anarthas pull you down. Really, seriously, you're very much aware of Anarthas when you prepare for class. So I hope this will be not downgrade of previous classes. We have very great speakers here repeatedly. Okay, my engine here. Sorry, because I had a short time, I was writing notes everywhere. Okay, so in this verse itself, we know the story, just quickly, that Dhritarashtra and Gandhari and also Vidura just left suddenly. So, and then the next day, Dhritarashtra was very lamenting, where they gone, where is Vidura gone? So, in this state of lamentation, he approached Sanjaya, who was servant of Dhritarashtra. But he was also lamenting. He said, first time, you never told me anything. I don't know where they are. So they are both lamenting. So obviously, they couldn't help each other much in this lamenting. Where are they? So, of course, there's a sage Narada who can see everything. He always finds opportunity to preach and appear there. And interesting that he didn't answer straight away, but there's all series of verses ahead, 7-8 and 7-8 before he answered, where are they actually? So always opportunity to preach. That's in Narada. So it's very interesting that incredible quality of Yudhishthira Maharaj. I mean, like, you know, when I meditate on such a kind of personality, you know, how much suffering he was causing to all Pandavas. And on the end, you know, oh, they must be drawn in the Ganges, whatever, you know, because I killed so many of their sons, you know. He was just lamenting, you know, not understanding, you know, Kurava's atrocities. Just incredible, you know, he was keeping him there. I'm just wondering, was he aware or, you know, ever mentioned his atrocity? Even Duryodhana, you know, obviously, you know, he got so much suffering from Duryodhana, but never mentioned about Duryodhana. This is such a quality, exalted quality of Vaishnava, see. And then Karna and all these 100 sons also, you know. So in that sense, in that lamentation state, Narada appeared. So, and you know, Sanjaya was lamenting, you know, where is he? You know, but Dhritarashtra didn't give a chance to Sanjaya to be again his advisor, to try to, you know, put him off, diminish his determination to go. Therefore, he didn't say to anyone anything, he just left. So that's a Kehakuru Nandana, first time in Dhritarashtra. You know, I'm going, nobody will stop me. And of course, his wife was following. And Vidura, considering that his job is done, disappeared as well. See. So, yeah, for initial life, one must be determined. That's the first thing. You have to chop yourself off. We all know that we were in different environments and we were interested in spiritual life. And but, you know, it's kind of crucial point of living must culminate at some point. Yeah, I want to give my life to that. If you all recall this very moment of your decision to really take spiritual life as a main goal in life, it's, I can remember my own. I will not share because, you know, it was very important and crucial and also emotional and like culmination of so many things. You choose spiritual life. That's just something amazing, yeah, like, you know. So that's the first one, determination. That's it, you know, going different way. Even if it's different than anyone else, you know, at least in my place, nobody was interested in spiritual life. And, you know, so to go against everything, you know, it's kind of really, yeah. And his challenge is incredible adventure. So determination first. So initially when we start our spiritual life, we are enthusiastic and with this decision. But then this enthusiasm wears off, as we know, very quickly. Because I don't want to disappoint anyone, but that's not real enthusiasm. It's kind of a combination of many things. That's without analyzing what it is. Then struggle arrives. So for me, struggle arrival was like proof that my mind has started to shape. That's a proof, the struggle when it comes. So you are first there preparing, like you're training there. Like those in sports, in football, whatever, getting warm first, enthusiastic, and then getting enrolled in the role, whatever. So, and then struggle starts, definitely. See, a real spiritual life starts when struggle starts. So, this is a very important point. And of course, our mind doesn't like it. So how we fight that? A very important thing that sadhana which we get works straight against our mind. Our sadhana is prescribed to us by acharyas, knowing very well how mind works, how false ego works. And sadhana is prescribed for us to go against that. We don't listen to our mind, but we take sadhana. Even if it's difficult, we take sadhana as prescribed for us. That's like a medicine for us. That's the beginning of conquering the mind. So in that lamenting state, coming back to the verse, when Narada came to the scene, they were, of course, both lamenting. See, and in that state, it's not so easy to preach to others. You know that. They're so overwhelmed with lamentation. See, but somehow Narada doesn't go straight to the point. Straight to the point. Boom, there's no introduction, like bridge preaching, like we do or something. So this just, shows something about qualities of those persons. We have through our Srimad Bhagavatam, all these verses. Now, they would accept straight away. There was no purport on that verse, this very verse. There was no purport in that time, which Narada spoke, this verse. There was no purport straight away. You know, this body, it speaks all the philosophy. All this verse is like a series of verses from second chapter towards the end, If you think the soul is this, if you don't think it's material, if your tongue is preacher, I think there's no need, reason for lamenting. So that's the same. So sometimes thinking, where Narada got this verse from? He just speaks. You see, his own words are there in the verse straight. And Bhagavatam was written earlier than that. And now his words are there inside. Where he's getting this philosophy from, like his own words. But when you see this series of verses from Bhagavad Gita, so Krishna spoke those verses. So there are innumerable verses which Narada simply took them, got realized knowledge about them, and spoke in his own words, the same knowledge. So that's it. So could we speak like Narada? I mentioned already. So that's not so easy. See, Prabhupada says, from any angle of vision or any philosophy, there is no support for your present state of lamentation or reason to grieve for the body. Intellectually, we accept that, but due to our attachment, this will not allow us to hear, to realize. See, for example, Gandhari, like you just mentioned, oh, this suffering, extreme example of suffering. 100 sons, all gone. You know how much suffering is there? Could you preach such a verse, come inside this verse to Gandhari? Of course, Gandhari was exalted. She could listen, maybe. But close to that, some lamentation of somebody. 100 sons gone. And on the end, towards the end, only one son's like, okay, let me just protect one son at least. Duryodhana, just one, if he's left, at least some relief. And then she told him, I can make you invincible. Just come, dressed in four directions, or naked completely. I can protect you. Just come in the middle of the night. And then, of course, why not? So many of my brothers are dead already. Invisibility is something which I really need. But then what? Krishna jumps in. Where are you going? where are you going, Duryodhana? Where are you going? Oh, well, going to see my mother. Wow, in that state. It's better to put some gamsha at least. And then, I think you're right. It's interesting that I never read Mahabharata, I have to admit, but Duryodhana never listened to Krishna's advices. He was in trouble always. And now when he was supposed to not follow his instruction, he followed. And this was more or less cause of his death. He got vulnerable in the groin area, which was covered. It's interesting, But then when Gandhari saw him, she was very disappointed. But when he told her, actually I met Krishna, she could realize providence, we cannot do anything against. So, but in that state of Gandhari's lamentation, you know, to preach such a thing, no, not possible, you see. Another point is like there's no purpose of this verse at the time, as I mentioned already. Or any verse in Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam in those days was just straight verses of people they would take, you know. So there's a quality of people in that time. I'm just wondering one thing I just mentioned, maybe a side point, but like Vyasadeva spoke. What is chronologically time when Vyasadeva wrote down Śrīmad-Bhāgavatam? What was that, beginning of Kali Yuga? Was it? I mean, Ganesh wrote in the beginning of Kali Yuga, yeah, after the departure of Krishna. Yeah. And this scene was, Krishna was still present, I think, in this. It was about the departure and this particular verse. But then, sages of Namesharanya, he spoke much after. Does anyone know chronologically when that happened? Somewhere after Krishna's departure, yeah. And then I'm just wondering, was Srimad Bhagavatam rewritten again, or how that goes? Oh, ahead. Yeah. Oh, before, yeah. I guess, yeah. Yeah. And then, and of course, later on, purports were written by many acharyas. Okay. Go back. So, I was talking about purports, you see. Dada. Although Prabhupada purports are for 10,000 years a standard, sometimes devotees are kind of rebelling against some devotees writing. Almost you can say commentary on Prabhupada's commentary. I know that Bhagavad Gita was written in quite few versions for people to understand Prabhupada's purports. And then, of course, when you take 11th canto, middle of the 10th canto, 11th canto, 12th canto, some devotees simply skip that. They don't even read because they consider, oh, these are, you know, not devotees on level of Prabhupada. And some temples even skip them from discussing in morning class. Even Manohar here, I think. But what are those purpose? Although they are based as much as possible on Vaishnava commentaries, on Prabhupada's lecture conversation, and of course there is also their own realization of those verses. And some devotees are kind of not easy with that to accept. But what means every day Srimad Bhagavatam class? It simply means purports. Our own purports, on Prabhupada purports, our own realizations. So what's the difference there? So we kind of expect others to accept our realizations, but then, as I mentioned earlier, you know, these purports. So we need many, many, many versions of Srimad Bhagavatam in sense to preserve Siddhanta and to give our own realizations. As Kali Yuga advancing, even people, few, less and less and less people will be able to understand Prabhupada purports. So you have to put our own realization according to time, place and circumstances now. So we need version of Srimad Bhagavatam. Each one of us has to have version, he has to digest. For example, when you study Srimad Bhagavatam or any Prabhupada books, now reading is okay. I was just in the beginning reading and reading until I start to take notes. This is so powerful. Take a notes, like I would just read and everything that stands out for me, I would write down. And over the years, I compiled few books, actually, on notes. So my churning and thinking of those realizations, as well as quotes. And when you really, and I read every single day my own quotes. And this produces another quotes, another deeper meditation, another. And then this was main reason why relish to read Srimad Bhagavatam really increased manifold. And I advise to everybody, that's a way to read Srimad Bhagavatam. Write the notes, meditate on them, churn, absorb mind, and then so many other points come in. And then from notes, another notes, and then from those notes, another notes. You just go deeper and deeper, and then of course you share them with others. And in this way, Srimad Bhagavatam enters your system. That's the reason. It's mentioned in 11th canto that Srimad Bhagavatam is there so that we have chance. But repeating it again and again and again and again, then our knowledge, our realization of the Supreme evokes just by churning this, thinking of subject matter. So that's the way to study Srimad Bhagavatam. Not just, I 1 hour, okay, I did my thing. Okay, of course, we have to do, depends how busy we are, but, you know, so therefore, you know, I remember when I started to write notes, it took me probably 5 years or more to finish Srimad Bhagavatam, because I was really going to study slowly, you know, and that's the way. And this was reason for really relishing it. It's not anymore dry. I met many devotees who just can't read, you know, just can't, you know. So that's a kind of hint how to study Srimad Bhagavatam, to go deep, think of subject, you know, meditate. So many things are there. So as I say, our mission is to suit our understanding to people, so we have to have our own purpose. Our realized knowledge is most powerful. When you speak your realized knowledge to people, other newcomers are most powerful. We can try, you know, I don't know, speak shlokas, and it's good, you know, because it helps you to remember. You can answer any question if you know shlokas, if you know, you know, you could. But this is not the realized knowledge yet. But when you speak your realization based on those purports, it's very powerful. For example, I've heard even classes on the verses which don't have purports. Anyone? Heather? You know, very deep, man, very deep. No purports. And, you know, so at first I was thinking, oh, he speaks. But then, or for example, there's some verses very esoteric, very amazing. Sometimes, for me, catchy. I kind of different psychology, you know. Some things are very standing up. But there's no purports sometimes. And those verses, like, I was just thinking, why they didn't get purports, like something very, I would like to know. But then, you know, I think of it. And of course, often Prabhupada gives purport, addressing the points from that verse in much ahead. If you read, you'll get that. But sometimes, not so. And then you think, what is? Over years, of course, over this meditation gives you some glimpse of understanding what is. So, main point is to think and meditate on what we read, what we study, yeah? Attentively. Okay, let's see, is there anything more here? So point is also Narada, as I mentioned in the beginning. He's a preacher. He's any chance he can use for preaching. That's an amazing thing of Narada Muni. You know, it's like, you know, you can go to hell if there's any chance to preach to somebody. You know, he's a liberator. He can go anywhere he wants, even spiritual world. And he's a totally absorbed in ecstatic emotions, chanting holy name. But it seems to me preaching is something which gives him must boost, you know. So that's something for preachers, you know. That's his, you know. He doesn't stand still there. He's just going, just any chance to preach. We're here. You could just answer to the Yudhishthira straight away. He's gone there, and then he mentioned later on, in a few days he'll leave his body, and he must do this, you know. Describing all yoga, which the Dhritarashtra performs, and Gandharva enter fire, but nobody just goes. First, dismantle his relationship with bodily concept of life. Tells him first truth. You know, listen, why you lament? You know, see, there's no reason to lament to this body. Boom, 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 boom. Okay, Dhritarashtra did this. But and then Yudhishthira could accept very easily. Oh, yeah, finally he gets liberation, you know. So that's how Narada does. So just last maybe points. How to transfer our sense of affection and ultimately separation of this world to Krishna. So how to transfer our... You don't know Krishna. You cannot cultivate separation. I mean, that's just separation is just culmination of affection. So how we develop affection to something, to anything, yeah? How we feel affection? Anyone? Few things. How we cultivate affection for things which we don't admire or is not our thing. How we develop affection?
We develop a relationship.
Relationship. How we develop even that. How you enter relationship. Like you don't have affection for somebody. I don't know. It's not that I don't like him. He's a great guy. You know, but like, you know, why should I enter a relationship with somebody which, you know, it's how you enter a relationship.
You get to know them first.
Oh, yeah, knowledge. Knowledge. That's good. So knowledge. And then, Jai Shri Radha Gautama Nanda, Sitaram Lakshman Man, Jai Shri Gaurinitha, Jai Shri Prabhupada. So you can go further a little bit. So, to know him, but then even that you have to start to know about something. How you start that? How you develop desire to know something, to know somebody? How you develop that?
I think there has to be something attractive about the thing or the person to draw you to that person. I think the attraction must be there.
Yeah, that's one way. Yeah.
When you need something, you're looking for something, or you have a lack, or
yeah. If you know what you're looking for, yeah.
I was just going to say, through association with someone who has that.
He has my mind. You see, like, you know exactly. So there is somebody who will tell you that something is good for you, even if you are not into it at all. But then that person has to be trustworthy by you. So this affection comes from affection for somebody else to whom you trust. See? He told you it's good for you, try, go for it. You know, like, you know, sometimes you preach to all your mates, you know, it's good for you, try this, try that. Of course, they don't listen. So some of them do, anyway. So person must be trusted, isn't so? That means all this final separation for Krishna starts with the trust in somebody who will tell you that something is good for you. That's a way. That is actual process, Vedic process, Prabhupada said. And those who are on the Vedic line hear about Krishna from authority. And through repeatedly hearing about him, Krishna becomes dear. According to the Bhagavatam, devotion gives birth to devotion. One must follow the principles of elementary bhakti, repeatedly hearing and chanting until the first light of pure devotion begins to dawn in the heart of sincere and faithful jiva. So it doesn't take long for one who gets attracted towards Krishna. So we all experience in some way, some aspect. But I never met somebody who's really into Krishna first time. All aspects. Always some of the aspect of Krishna consciousness is attracted to that. So, and our role is to find that. Start that somehow. Find a way to connect with that. That means all sorts of preaching. You do cultivate that some attraction. So that's it. So as a first step, you said, like, we have to decrease affection for things of this world and finally diminish fully. So that's another step, to diminish slowly affection for this world and develop attraction. And how we do this? How do we diminish this affection? It's through Dharma. Dharma means duty. So first you do out of duty something which you know is good for you. And then this creates gradual detachment. That's a very important point, actually. But Dharma, just duty, without simultaneously cultivating attachment for something, will not do the job, because you will turn into impersonalist. Everything will be dry. Because Sarva Jagamitya, whatever, you know, what impersonalist main drive for their progress is this world is bad, is out of frustration. So this will lead, if you just do your duty, do your dharma, without cultivating affection for Krishna, you'll become an impersonalist. That's finally, you know. Of course, you know, we have stages described in our books, from Shraddha to Prema. That's another thing which I've not discussed. But like Madhurya Kandambini, Nectar of Devotion, describes how this goes. But, you know, it's easier to speak than do. But, I mean, I can say that, I mean, I don't have much affection for, I never had any affection much for anyone, really, as a person. It was kind of, you know, just me, I'm pretty impersonal, individual, you know. But for those who have such an affection for anyone, the loss is very great. Like, unfortunately, nowadays we have these cases. So how you preach to such a person, how you pacify him, especially if he's not devotee. Do you have any experience? Like, somebody was expecting you to kind of help them to, and he comes to you and you don't know just what to say. You cannot speak philosophy to them, really. Do you have any experience? Give him a mic.
Once I met one lady on book distribution, and she asked me, what happens to my son? He committed suicide. And she was literally just crying there on the street. So I could say, well, he will become a ghost now and he will suffer for a long, long time. But I was like, is this the right thing to say? Yes, that is tattva, that is the truth, but will it help the person to develop some attachment to Krishna? So I just say, with whatever love you have for your son and for God, cook food,
wow,
offer it to God, and then the remnants in your mind offer to your son. And this is like when you offer the prasadam to the someone who departed, he gets the benefit of honoring the prasadam. So rather than pointing out, yeah, oh, yeah, he's a ghost, you can just give the remedy how to, yeah, kind of not make him a ghost.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah, that's good. That's why, I mean, there's many ways according to your ability to speak. You know, you can. That's a great advice. I mean, most of the people, most of the cases, just need somebody's shoulder to cry. That's all. And I let them speak, let them cry, they cry, and then all, most of the time they're ready to hear something about. So then, like Prabhupada was an expert. You know, he would just listen all this rubbish sometimes from people, and they just find one catchy point. Okay, boom, and then he will dismiss all this and direct conversation, something completely different way. A person will forget what he said, and then that's the expert preacher, how to find a way to connect. So, okay, I mean, I think I exhausted more or less my realization of, not realization, but just meditation this verse. I had a few hours only. So, today is this disappearance of these great acharyas. I'm not expert at all. I don't know anything about. I didn't ever study those great personalities. Especially, I think most prominent of all those we mentioned this morning is Madhavacharya. So we are fortunate that last few months almost, we're hearing life of Madhavendra Puri, yeah. So you can recall that he's the first one who experience love of God in all our sampradaya. Lord Chaitanya would say that his ecstatic symptoms are only due to Madhavendra Puri, Ishvara Puri, that he experienced such ecstatic symptoms. I don't know how he departed, actually. Does anyone know how Madhavendra Puri departed? Although his appearance there, but I always kind of, not more interested, but the departure of great saintly persons is for me something which tells me about those persons on the end. If you see all the saints, their last moment in which state their consciousness was, what they would say, what they would do, it tells you about their life, about their mission, like Prabhupada. Never change anything. From beginning to the end, he was preaching Krishna consciousness. And the last point on deathbed, he was speaking the same. There are many so-called, whatever, sadhus, who would speak one thing, but towards the end, they kind of morph into something totally different. They just can't hold their real nature, and they would see who they are. So when you study life of those people, you can see at the end how they finished, what happened to them. You can see how genuine they are. So that's an important thing. And all these Vaishnava Acharyas, I've not mentioned those names. I don't even know, I have to admit. I'm not scholarly. I'm not a Brahmanical. But we heard many, many times those stories about Vaishnava Acharyas. But for me, most important thing is that by their example, they show us the reality of spiritual world, reality of Krishna, reality that this is not something just you kind of hoping, like wishful thinking, one day we'll achieve Krishna. And very often you find devotees just practicing for so many years, trying. Nothing happens, no taste even for spiritual life. And then doubts are constantly attacking us. Is that really reality? Is that Krishna exists? Is spiritual world exists? Is that process for we have doubts very often. But when I read about life of those great personalities, how Krishna personally manifests in their life, how they have exchanges, where they lived the life, they were so qualified in any way materially, but they dedicated life to Krishna. They had exchanges, they had realizations, like Madhavendra Puri's life. We heard all these stories about Gopal deities, and incredible, Krishna personally dealing with them. So, and we're following that same process. We are in the same line. So for me, this great source of inspiration, just that message that their own life, that this what I'm doing is reality. You know, what waits for us at the end, that's a reality of life. It's not something just, you know, as many devotees lost their faith and, you know, disbelieve in the process and everything. But for me, that's the essence of this life of Acharya. Of course, you can pray to them on their appearance, disappearance, to get mercy, definitely. But for me, most important, crucial point is to understand that, you know, Krishna is real, spiritual world is real. This process will get you there. Hare Krishna. If anyone has something to say, yeah.
Hi Krishna, thank you for your class. I really do like them because it gets us to introspect and kind of think a little bit deeper about how we apply Krishna consciousness in our lives. I'm just responding also to the question that you asked that Antaranga Prabhu was responding to of how we can respond to people and probably any circumstances we've been. So last Janmashtami, which we had a thing called Ask a Monk session. Where different people could come and they would sit and ask, you know, a monk a question. And at the moment in time, there was no one there. So I was standing there by myself, and then the devotee told me, okay, now you come and sit and answer some of these questions. And then we had this British man, a white-bodied man, who came, and he asked me this question, and it was very, very... I found it, but let me say the question. Basically, he was saying he had his wife. His wife was... Hindu and was having all these different deities and had deities of Krishna as well and was serving them all throughout her life with so much love. And he used to think that it was just a waste of her time. And then she got sick, I think around 10 years ago, before, so before I'm coming, and ended up leaving her body, but she didn't want to leave her body. So she was always in distress, so I don't want to die, but she ended up leaving her body. So his question was, what was the point if she was doing all these things and, you know, she didn't want to die and she left her body. So how can I understand this, you know? And it was obviously such a difficult...
Should be easy answer.
I wanted to tell you, you know, it's...
Please tell me.
So I wasn't able to do that, but I just told him, you know, these things, that's the nature of life. And I quoted how even for him, it was a season of happiness and distress. So this was a season of distress, as it said in chapter 2, text 14. And told him that she has gotten some benefit and you'll experience it. And part of it is you also getting healing from yourself. And so he was kind of pacified, but still it was very hard, you know, to kind of do that. So it makes me also appreciate people like Prabhupada who are expert in giving those responses and making those people feel pacified, even if they were, you know, going through something so difficult. So I just thought I should share that.
Yeah. I mean, there are millions of ways to speak to people. Sometimes you think, oh, I shouldn't have that said that. Oh, why did I say that? You know, you just there's no really, you know...
Hare Krishna, I have one question, Prabhu. How can we develop our relationship with the Sampradaya Acharyas and get the mercy from them? Because what we do is all according to the Guru Sadhu Shastra, but how can we truly perceive the magic of their benedictions on us? Like, we can see Prabhupada is Bhakti Siddhanta, Gaurakishodas Babaji, Jagannandas Babaji, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, six Goswamis. And how can we truly, truly see their blessings in our lives?
Oh, I don't know. I'm qualified to say this. It begins, I would just say, with appreciation. With appreciation, you have to study their life, like especially those avadutas, you know, Gaurakishordas, Vamshidas. You just appreciate that, you know, where are they? So how to connect to get the blessing? I guess you don't need to jump or to get blessings of, I don't know, whether the Gaurakishordas, but you know, this is your guru, this is your Prabhupada. They know, I guess. They should know. So, because your guru gets blessing from his guru, and he's from his guru, he's all flaws. We know you are connected to it. The same mercy, but is even more amplified as parampara goes down. So, how get they get their blessing? They are pleased if your guru is pleased, if his guru is pleased. I mean, you can answer many ways. If anyone has some hint, I mean, you have to understand their mission. I mean, of course, they have different modes also as you go in past, so you cannot follow that. You know, their moods changing, and you know, you have to know the mission of your guru. If you know his mission, then you can satisfy him. If you know the mission of Guru and you support him, help him in his mission, he is most pleased. He's not like cooking for him, buying him socks or something. You know, everybody does that, it's easy. Only few assist Guru in his mission, really. And I have to say, maybe it's not nice to say, but every Guru has only few or even just one truly qualified disciple in that sense. Who understand the mind of Guru, understand his mission, and then put his needs aside and just serves Guru. We would like to be on that level, but we are afraid to be burned like a fire. You see fire in distance, to get warm, you have to come close. But we are afraid not to burn. What can I say? We all know this resistance in the mind. When I speak, in me there is this churning of resistance. Yet, you know, therefore Guru will not push you, you'll ask as much as you can. You know, but if you prove yourself, these are very rare cases of such exalted devotees. But anyway, you can speak something. You are an intelligent boy. Tell me something to pacify my mind. You know, you must have some thoughts on, you know.
What you said makes very much sense, that why we should try to please too many like lines of sampradaya ahead when we can please our
mind. Yeah, of course.
And by that, everything is done.
Okay, if you try to please Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, whoa. I'm afraid if you read his books, there's a pamphlet still in the ashram there, Who is Suitable to Live in the Ashram by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati. Whoa, none of us. You know, his expectation was, of course, he was, of course, lenient, you know, he was very strict. Also, Prabhupada, he has his instances, very strictness, but then lenient at the same time. So, to try to please those great, great Paramahamsas, like, try to please, who is that very Avaduta, Gorky Shoridas Babaji or Vamshidas, who is, yeah, both of them. My goodness, you know, you want to sit with me to chant, come, leave everything. You know, or he would recognize person is just faking, you know. He wants to be connected with me to get his own fame, to please such a people. This is everything. He simply is thinking, purity of heart, I don't want anything for myself. That's a formula, you know. No depreciousness, no, you know, second thought, no crookedness. I have one thing in mind and I say one thing. Just simply honesty. That's a key for everything. How you please him, you're honest. You know, there's no some benefit or you know, meditation, but I'm going to get to it. That's simple. That's a spiritual life. There's no depreciousness, I guess. Hare Krishna. Just to give you a break now. Hare Krishna.